Welcome to the Lesbian Book Club with Claire Lydon. Please enjoy the podcast from My Lesbian Radio.
Hello and welcome to episode 31 of the Lesbian Book Club with me, your host, Claire Lydon. On this edition, we're going to be speaking to superstar author Harper Bliss and her wife Caroline. They both form Lady Lit Publishing, from which Harper does all her books. So we'll be chatting to them, and you can hear that in a few moments. But before we get to that, we're going to see what's hot in the UK and US Amazon lesbian fiction charts, as well as doing an update about what's happening in the world of lesfic and in the world of me. First up then, the Amazon charts. And riding high as I record this on the very last day of May, in the US is Edie Bryant with her book Broken Record. Now, this one has a plaid shirt on the front, or checkered if you're in the UK, so hitting the demographic, the stereotypical demographic, square on the nose, and it concerns a musician who falls for a record label boss. As you can guess, it's the last chance saloon in love for both of them. So can they climb the love charts and get to where they really do belong? Buy the book, find out. You know the score. Also doing well in the US is H.L. Logan's Starstruck. Now, this isn't the first book I've seen by H.L. Logan, so she is cranking them out. She or he, I'm not sure if it's a man or woman. And the story is two actresses who are cast in a lesbian romance movie. And they're both, supposedly straight actresses up until this point. But during those steamy rehearsal scenes, something strikes a chord in both of them as being a bit more real than anything that's gone before. So will anything transpire? I think you can guess it probably will, because there's a book. But yeah, that one looks like a good plot. I like the sound of that one. Also floating to the top in the US is Sarah Waters' Fingersmith, which is a classic and frankly great to see it actually in the charts. 15 years since it was published, which just goes to show that books have no shelf life, especially if you're Sarah Waters. But, you know, like I remember Jeanette Winston getting into the lesbian fiction charts once. It's only happened once in the over 3 years I've been doing this podcast. So, and Sarah Waters, this is her first showing. So there you go. But great to see her up there. But also doing well in the US are Lace Gardner and Saxon Bennett, who've teamed up for another hit novel with their book Straight from the Heart, which is the second book in the True Heart series. Now, weirdly, for a book released in May, this one has snow on the front cover. It does. A woman sitting on a bench in like loads of layers and a woolly hat and snow on the bench. Weird, but okay, we'll go with it. I'm, you know, they're going for standout. They are standing out. Anyway, this one, the story is, it's the story of Rosa and Steph's relationship. So it's a firefighter and a police officer and the many obstacles they face. So rather than being a just meet book, it's a relationship drama. So expect love, loss and friendship, says the blurb. Bring your tissues is my bet. In the UK, Megan O'Brien's Her Best Friend's Sister is still top five. And I think the title says it all there. Her Best Friend's Sister. That sounds intriguing to me already. Now, I've heard, I'm sure Megan writes brilliant stories as well, but I've heard scenes, which are not easy. So hats off to her. I've never read one of her books yet, so it's on my TBR list. But I go into lesbian fiction reading groups on Facebook quite often and they all rave about Megan O'Brien. And her fans seem to love this one as well. One reviewer on Amazon says, "I don't think I've read such a long, sustained piece of erotic writing ever." So that is a recommendation right there. So you can see for yourself when you buy the book. And also in the UK, a big welcome back to Jade Winters, who's probably not been out of the charts for very long, but Jade is a rapid-fire writer, so she's been out of the charts for a good few months now. But it's great to see her back. She came back with not one book, but two in a month. The first one was Lost in You, and that did really well. And her new one, Just One Destiny, is still top five in the UK. And this is the story of interior designer Carissa, who signs up to a mutual let's get jiggy agreement with her boss Teal. And I think it's kind of a no strings attached deal. But obviously, the heart wants what the heart can't get. And so things get more complicated. Will their hearts win out over their heads? Again, buy the book and you can find out. And I really like the cover on that one. It's a lovely sort of dark, brooding watercolour sort of painting. I like it. So that's the charts for this week. Now, Lesfic Land, I'm sorry if I'm sounding a bit throaty, husky. I kind of lost my voice last week, so I've delayed recording this, but I'm hoping I'm sounding all right. So Lesfic Land is on the brink of award season right now, with the Lambda Literary Awards taking place in June and the Golden Crown Literature Society Awards taking place in July. So we're waiting on the brink for those, but we do have some other news. One bit of sad news to start off with, actually, is to tell you that the much-loved blog UK Lesfic posted its last piece this month, with its authors Carrie Hunter and Tig Ashton saying there are just now just too many lesbian authors to keep up with, which is brilliant on one hand, but very sad for everybody else on the other who loved reading the bi-weekly blog that kept us up to date with all things UK Lesfic. But a big hand to both Carrie and Tig for keeping the UK Lesfic blog going for the last 4 years. But as they say, they've got books to write, damn it, and only so many hours in the day. But the blog will be left up as a resource, so hurrah for that. And it's still got some great stuff in it, and I'm sure it'll continue to be a great resource, actually, for loads of people. I know when I first started writing and I put the words UK lesbian fiction into Google, it was the first site that came up for me. So I'm sure it will serve a purpose for years to come anyway. Other stuff coming up that you might want to book tickets for if you're in the UK. The World of Lesfic. First, there's Elfest, which is taking place in July from the 21st to the 24th. It's got a new venue in the Midlands in the UK, and there are no less than 3 literary panels taking place. So get yourself along there if you're in the UK to meet all your favourite authors. I'm not going this year, I'm afraid to say. I can't make it this year, but I know the likes of Angela Peach, Claire Ashton, Jade Winters, Kiki Archer, to name but a few, are going. Like I say, there are 3 panels, so I read that's probably, I don't know, 10 to 15 authors going along. So tickets are available now. Just type in Elfest into Google. And talking of that, if you want to go along to the Golden Crown Literature Festival, they really do encourage readers to go along. So if you're in the US, go along there and meet all your favourite authors. So many people go along to that. All the big names, all the newbies. I've never been. I'd love to go, but not this year, because I'm actually in Chicago next month in June, and the con is in Chicago in July, so can't really justify going to Chicago twice. The last thing is the DV Literary Festival is happening this year in the UK from November the 3rd to the 5th, with a programme jam-packed with authors. Jam-packed, I tell you. It's tight, like a very tight jar of raspberry jam. Including the likes of, yes, wait for it, Stella Duffy, who was one of the first ever lesbian fiction books, novels that I wrote. No, I did not write Stella Duffy's novels. I read it. So very excited to meet her. Val McDermid, who is just fantastic. She's a brilliant writer, but she's also a terrific speaker. I've seen her before, so very excited to see her and you know, be on the same bill as Val. Very excited. VG Lee is going along, who's terrific. And also romance author favourites like Kiki Archer and Claire Ashton, and also me, I'm pleased to say. I will be going along and taking part in the DV Literary Festival. It's taking place in Birmingham, November the 3rd to the 5th, so do book your tickets, come along and say hi. There's an award ceremony there, and it's going to be terrific. Oh yes, talking of those awards, if you fancy nominating for the best diva lesbian romance or lesbian crime novel or just general lesbian fiction, have a look at the divaliteraryfestival.com/, I'm not sure, but awards. If you go to Diva Literary Festival, it says awards, and you can nominate. If you want to nominate me, Nothing to Lose is a great book, isn't it? Try that one. All right then, that's the news from Lesfic Land. So what have I been up to since we last spoke? Well, apart from having Lurgy, I've been ill for about the last 2 weeks, so I'll be glad not to cough and lose my voice and all that. I'm hoping I'm going to be well because we're going away on holiday to Toronto for a family wedding, and then we're going to Chicago for a week. So that will be really nice. So, but that's the first 3 weeks in June gone. So we're flying this week. So I've got to keep clearing my throat and taking those lozenges. But in the last month, I've been getting my new book ready for launch. A Girl Called London is the title. It's the third book in the London romance series. It's a standalone book, so can be read without reading London Calling and This London Love. But if you've read those two, you'll enjoy it even more. And it's got a few recurring characters in it, but it is a standalone novel with a brand new romance at its heart. And I'm going to read you the blurb in my best blurb voice. So are you ready? Here's my blurb voice, everyone. Meet Tanya Grant, a high flyer who's ready for a fresh start. That is, until her grand dies, leaving behind her dog, Delilah, and a hot mess of family pain. Enter Sophie London, dog water and girl about town. She's on a romance sabbatical after getting burnt, and nothing changes when she meets Tanya. However, when their paths keep crossing, the pair are thrown together on a road trip to Tanya's hometown, and what happens next changes both their lives forever. If you love romance with humour and heart, along with a cast of pooches, you'll love the latest London romance from me. Join Tanya and Sophie on their journey of a lifetime as they discover whether love really can lift them up where they belong. Did you like that last cheesy bit there? That was good, eh? But yeah, I hope you're excited about that one. I'm really, really excited to get it out there. And I'll be doing that when I get back from holiday, which will be last week of June. And as well as that, my please say that my first ever audiobook, narrated by Gabrielle Baker, Nothing to Lose, will be out this summer. Gabrielle's finished the recording. It's just being sort of tweaked a bit by her producers. Then I'll be listening to it when I'm back from holiday. So next podcast, I should be able to give you a launch date, with luck, fingers crossed. Plus, I'm working on my next book already. I'm about the third of the way through that. No title as yet, but when it happens, I will let you know. So until then, I'm going to go off and get my voice back and have a holiday. And then I will see you back here next week, next week. But before we do that, let's get on to the main interview with Harper Bliss and her wife, Caroline. Please enjoy. So joining me today is the super prolific author Harper Bliss and her wife Caroline. Together, the duo run their small press, Lady Lit Publishing, which publishes Harper and other authors. Harper is a huge favourite with fans of lesbian romance, and her books are regular chart hoppers around the globe. The most recent being Everything Between Us and This Foreign Affair, part of the Pink Bean series. Harper and Caroline are currently digital nomads, and 2017 is shaping up to be a tour de force for them, launching their new service, mylesfic.com. So welcome, Harper and Caroline.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for having us.
You're very welcome. It's lovely to have you. And did I cover everything in that intro?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
You said some nice things about me, so that's all right.
So, you know, I like to butter you up to start off, you know. So,
well, I've been here before, so, you know.
It's true.
I know, it's nice talking to you.
You are the first guest that we've had back on. So, well done for that. Yeah, well done
what
for that.
What an honour.
I know, right? You're the first person who gets to talk to me twice. What a treat. I think it's fitting that it is you, because quite a lot's changed since we spoke. We think you were like numbers episode 6 or 7, so... a lot of change in the world of lesfic and in your life as well since then, hasn't it?
Oh, yeah, a lot has changed, but, you know, for the better.
Yeah.
On all fronts, I would say.
Yeah.
I mean, for lesfic, definitely. Mm-hmm. There's so much more, and I think, I don't really know, but I hope better lesfic out there. And for me, yeah, I've done pretty well in the past 2 years, so it's been pretty good for me.
Yeah, awesome. So, paint a picture of where you're speaking to us from today, seeing as though we know that you've been globe trotting.
Well, today we're at the moment.
Sorry, say that again.
We're in Hong Kong at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
So we're in a tiny, tiny flat flat along the escalator in Hong Kong, where real estate is very expensive and the flats are super tiny. But yeah, it's good to be back in Hong Kong. So
cool. Yeah, no, I was just saying to you earlier, my wife's from Hong Kong, and we were thinking of maybe going back there, but we were looking at flats, and you don't get a lot for your money.
Oh, it's crazy.
I think going from my our nice sort of two-bed terrace with a garden in London would be a bit of a shock, culture shock.
Well, you would probably have to live really, really far away from the central area of Hong Kong if you wanted to not pay an exorbitant price for that kind of real estate here.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've got you on today together, which is another first as well. The first time I've had two people on. So you guys, you're just trailblazing with your firsts. We've got you on because, as well as producing all your books, you're just about to launch a new service, which is called mylesvic.com. And it's a lesvic discount newsletter, which all the listeners should sign up for right after this. They listen to this, right? So tell us about how the service was conceived.
Yeah, well, you know, actually, I thought of it. It was I will never forget. It was my very last ferry ride in Hong Kong from the island, because we used to live on an island, to the city. And I was listening to a podcast, and they were talking about mailing lists, as you know, self-publishing podcasts tend to do. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I just thought, how about a lesbian book club? You know, and I said, oh, Caroline, you know, what do you think about that? And we started talking about it, and you know, immediately we could think of so many reasons why it would be a good idea, because you know, lesfic in general does not get treated very well everywhere. You know, it gets lumped in with general LGBT, and while the readership for gay male fiction is so different than for female gay fiction. So we said, yeah, you know, why don't we give this a go? Mm-hmm. Because it's a win-win. It's good for authors and it's good for readers. So
absolutely.
Because I think a lot of lesbian readers, they get so frustrated with services like BookBub, right? Because they sign up for the LGBT section, and 7 times out of 10 they don't get lesbian fiction. They get something else, something they're not really interested in. So we said, why don't we just do that?
Yeah, we get big bare chests on the front, male ones, which is always lovely. So how have you gone about setting it up, and how's it going so far?
Well, we set up the website first. I think we have two websites, one for readers and one for authors, because of course there's two sides to this project. One side is getting readers to subscribe so that they can get the newsletter. The other one is to get authors to submit their books to be featured in the newsletter. So we've had to work on both sides, but we've done some advertising to get subscribers. Harper obviously already had a pretty substantial mailing list of her own that we contacted to see, you know, to tell them about this new service, and hope to get some of them subscribed to it. On the author side, we contacted a few authors and publishers who we thought might be a good fit for this to start out with, and everyone was very, very enthusiastic about it. I think we had a universally positive response both on readers and author side.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you told me about it, I thought of it from both sides too. Like you say, it is frustrating getting the BookBub LGBT stuff through, most of it that you're not interested in. So, and as an author, it's great to have another outlet. So it is.
Yeah, because it's so frustrating when you get the BookBub rejection, right? Every time. It's, oh, my goodness, I don't want to submit to BookBub anymore. It's so bad for the ego.
It's like, I do think though, it's slightly easier to get a BookBub deal, isn't it, if you're LGBT. I know I go to a author meeting in London, and everyone's always amazed that I get so many. So right in niches.
Well, it's easier than some other categories.
Yeah.
So there's fewer of us, so
exactly.
Know, it might be a little bit easier.
Exactly. So have you had a lot of readers sign up for the service thus far?
Well, it's not too bad to start off with, I think, for our first newsletter going out soon. So, I don't know, do we want to say numbers?
You don't have to say numbers if you don't want to, no, just general.
I think we have enough for a good spike in the rankings.
Cool. So so now you've got the My Lesvic on the cards. So is world domination your next step? That's much.
Well, you know, that's the plan. It's only Lesvic, though. That's what I always say.
Yeah.
A bit of a small part of the world would be good to start with, and then we'll see about the rest of the world later.
You've got to start somewhere. You know, you're doing well. But no, seriously, it sounds like it's going to be a great service. So basically, how it's going to work exactly? If somebody signs up for this service, what can they expect?
So they'll get an email every Friday with a few books. I think what we're aiming to have about 3 or 4 books in every email. So books that are discounted for a day or two at least. That's what we ask authors to have the books discounted for at least 2 days. So everybody, you know, whatever their time zone or whenever they get the email, has a chance to buy the book at a discount. So there'll be about 4 books in every email, and it'll be once a week. So people are not overwhelmed by too many books, because we don't want that either. I mean, we know a lot of people are on limited budgets to purchase books, which is why discounted books are very interesting to a lot of people, but you don't want to have 10 different books that they might want at the same time. So we're limiting it to that number for now. And
for the authors as well, because we don't want to put them in with an email with 10 different other authors, you know.
Yeah, if there are only 4 books, there's a bigger chance that a reader will purchase more of the books that are featured. So that's why we chose to feature about 4 books in every.
And the books are discounted minimum 50%, right? But usually more. But the minimum discount that we ask for is 50% of the regular price.
Okay, all right. So basically, they'll get one email a week with like 4 discounted books, which sounds really good. I'll be there with my Amazon trigger finger, and that's the idea. So looking forward to that. And when does that launch?
That launches on the 19th of May.
And we're recording this on the 18th of May, so it's tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
Hooray!
We have work to do.
Yeah, you need to make this short, right? and I was late for the interview, bad Claire. So by the time this comes out, readers can go and sign up and get this email once a week. So what's the website they need to go to?
We said that together.
You did.
So merged.
You were just slightly off, so you were just like echoing each other. It was a beautiful moment. So it's mylesvic.com, and we'll put that in the show notes as well so that people know where to go. So that's brilliant. So just getting back to your books then, Harper, like I said, so much has changed since you came on the podcast 2 years ago, one of my first 10 guests. And at that point, you'd just written At the Water's Edge, which is your first novel, I think. Is that right?
Yes, that's right.
And you said before that's the book that changed it all. So, and since then, you've been like a writing machine, written. I counted 10. Is that right or not?
It must be something like that. I could not remember the number because I've written so many.
Yeah,
something like that.
Do sometimes the characters of one book walk out of one and into another, and you're like, no, go away. So tell me about, you said that At the Water's Edge was the book that changed it. So was there a light bulb moment? And describe, you know, how you think the last 2 years has gone.
Well, yeah, At the Water's Edge was like my first standalone novel-length book. And it did so well. Clearly I need to do this again, you know, if I want to, you know, say if I have a book like this every 2 months, you know, how amazing would that be? So I said, well, you know, I'll just write, and that's what I've been doing. So, but I must also say, And I'm not saying it because she's, you know, doing this interview with me, but the reason why I can produce so many books is also because of Caroline. You know, I always say she's my not-so-secret weapon because, you know, she does so much work on a book because, you know, I write, but she does, like, basically most of the other work. I mean, you know how much work is involved in getting a book out, right? Mm-hmm. So we split the tasks, really. So that's how we've been able to do it because we both work full-time for Lady Lit, and this is all we do. So, I mean, I know sometimes people say, oh, you write so fast, and how is it possible? But this is how it's possible. It's because I'm not alone.
Yeah.
We do this together.
So you need to set up a service, sort of mycaroline.com or something like that.
No way. I'm never doing that.
You know, I'd be interested in that.
I'd like to keep her for myself.
Yeah, I can understand.
That.
Yeah. So like you say, it is a very collaborative process, and that is how you've been able to get so many books out. And is your process of creating? I know, obviously, you write the first draft, Harper, but is the creative process a collaborative process, i.e., coming up with ideas? For instance, you've tackled depression, weight, booze. You know, there's been a few different issues you've tackled in your books. Is that a collaborative process?
Yeah, I think we always talk about, you know, like when I finish the book, we start talking about the next one. Say, what's it going to be? We always talk about that beforehand. And we do a lot of the, well, as far as I plot, we do a lot of that together as well. And we come up with the characters together. And because, you know, it's just so much easier when you can talk about it with someone instead of just having to, you know, come up with stuff on your own. So it is all very collaborative. But as far as the subjects that I write about, you know, I don't know, I think a lot of them I've encountered in my own life, you know, it's probably like struggled with to a certain extent.
Mm-hmm.
So as a, and I mean, my readers, they really seem to enjoy that, you know, when a book goes a little bit deeper than just like two women meeting and, you know, falling in love and, you know, doing it. So, I think I put a little bit of myself in every book, but that is not to say that, you know, I am my characters. It's absolutely not, you know, the case at all. But I think as a writer, it's normal to put, you know, the things that you yourself struggle with, to put that in your characters a little bit. So, plus, I think it also makes the characters much more real. And I think that is also what readers respond to, because, you know, they see these very flawed characters and they say, oh, you know, they see themselves reflected as well. I think that's very important as well, because, you know, I often get the comment that say, oh, your characters are so real, you know, they're not like regular Les Fig where everyone is like 20-something and super toned and they have a good job and blah, blah, blah. You know, it's like, you know, it's them really. So, yeah.
Yeah, no.
That's basically how it works.
Cool, absolutely. And keeping it real is very important. And it's interesting you said that you put a bit of yourself into every book. I think that's true as well. My wife's always telling me that I've lifted conversations that we've had a couple of days ago and just stuck them in a book, which I'll refute to the end of time, obviously.
Yes.
Harper also likes to put stuff in characters that she, you know, things that she wishes she was, like in Everything Between Us. The main character is a really, really good singer, which is absolutely not the case in real life.
What do you mean? I don't know what you're talking about.
I have video evidence of our last trip to karaoke video. I can send it to you there if you want to see that.
I would love to.
No, let's not go there. Let's move on.
I am a karaoke queen, actually, so if we ever do meet up, we'll have to go to karaoke. And
I can
wow you with my karaoke prowess. So, and as you say, so you put a little bit of yourself in every book. So let's talk about In the Distance There Is Light. Going on to that one.
You caught me out there.
Oh, do you see what I did? So you said at the time you thought it was the best thing you've ever written. I think probably that's because it went very deep into the subject matter. And in it, the lead Sophie loses her boyfriend Ian. And he was the child of two women. His biological mother dies, but in her grief, Sophie and Ian's non-biological mother, Dolores, get it on. So, how did you come up with that plot?
I don't know. You know, I was on a long-distance flight, you know, it's like you just, like, sit there and there's nothing on the screen, and I don't know, it just came to me, but I think, because I think it's pretty well known, I have a bit of a cougar fetish, mm-hmm. so, you know, I like to write about age gap and things like that, I really like that, and, I thought, you know, what if I take it one step further, and I got really, really very excited by the idea. So, and I really, because at the time, it would have made much more business sense for me to write book two in the Pink Bean series, because I just, you know, released book one, so, you know, it makes much more business sense to just continue the series. But I said, oh, no, I really, really want to write this book, and I enjoyed writing it so much, but, you know, I know it's a bit, I mean, some people find it untoward, and I understand it, but I don't. You know, I find it very inspiring. I don't know, I think it's because of, I mean, it is a taboo subject and it's very controversial, but as a writer, I really like to write stories like that. Mm. I don't know why, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm a very straightforward person in real life. You know, my wife is only 3 years older than me. So,
so there you go, you see, you're living out your cougar fantasies in your books.
Well, I guess I am. So I'm very excited about a new French president.
Yes.
Yeah. His wife, I mean, yeah. Come on. Yeah. Like, what? I need to write something like that.
Yeah.
So this is why I'm bringing French kissing back. I said, oh, this needs to go into my book.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You can make that one up, could you?
Yeah.
But hurrah. Hurrah for Macron, hurrah for France, a beacon of sanity in a world, a mad world. Anyway, we're not a political show here. So, talking about Pink Bean as well, they've been really successful, this series you've been writing over the last, sort of, I don't know, 6-9 months, something like that. And they follow the adventures of a staff of a coffee shop in Australia. I don't know exactly where in Australia, but...
It's in Sydney.
Sydney, right. So You've written series before, as you said, like French Kissing and High Rise, but they were smaller sort of novella chunk sizes. And this is the first full-length novel series you've written. So have you found that, and what have been the biggest challenges writing them?
Well, I think the big difference is that all the Pink Bean books, they're standalone, whereas, you know, French Kissing and High Rise, they were like, you had to have read the previous books, so it's much more difficult to hook readers with... later books, so this one has been much more successful, I think, because of this. But previously, I find writing series, because it was always the same characters coming back, I don't know, because, you know, I like a shiny new thing. So it's
a very short attention span.
Always having to write the same characters was a bit boring after a while, but with Pink Bean, it's different characters in every book. Like, sometimes, you know, the characters in book five, for instance, they're absolutely not yet in any of the four previous books, so it's like always starting a new book. Mm-hmm. But you do have recurring characters, which makes it very familiar, and this is as well for me as a writer as for the reader, because readers, they do love characters coming back, but it doesn't mean that, you know, the whole storyline has to revolve around the returning characters. So that's been pretty good. But I do have to say, one of my main gripes with writing series is like consistency, like with the characters, you know, when I don't remember what my characters did in book one, you know, so it's very hard to remember all of that. So actually what I've done is recently I've asked two people who like enjoy my books, I've paid them to make Bibles of my Pink Bean series and my French Kissing series. So they made Excel sheets of everything my characters do, like what they wear, what they eat, what they look like, and this goes as far as their preferred sexual position. So that has been a really good investment for me.
Wow, yeah. So, that's quite a thing. So they're just like fans who said that they would like to do it.
Well, you know, I have my launch team, right? There's like, you know,
yeah.
a small group of readers who review my books, and I just, you know, I ask, you know, who wants to do this, and you know, I've paid them a little bit of money to do this for me, but they said I would have done it for free because, you know, I enjoy your books, and it gave them a good excuse to read them again. So yeah
wow, that's a good tip. So because you're going back to writing French Kissing again, are you? Did I read that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, even though commercially, I don't know, it hasn't been a seller like Ping Bean,
mm-hmm.
but people do love it, and I get a lot of questions like, oh, when is it coming back? Especially because a couple of months ago I brought out the box set, and then, you know, there was some renewed interest. So, yeah, I said, well, you know, I'll just bring them back. Plus, I've also crossed over with my Ping Bean series, so in the fourth book that came out, like, recently, there are some, because one of the characters is French, there are some Ping Bean French Kissing characters in there as well, so I thought, you know, I can start leading people in the way of French Kissing again, and then I think I should give them a new season.
It makes sense. And a bit of crossover, get people in, and then I've read one of your French Kissing. I really enjoyed it, so yeah, I think it's very, very worth people going back because they're always there. They're evergreen.
Yeah.
And you said recently that A Foreign Affair, which is the latest Pink Bean book, has a fair bit of raunch. Now, over the years, you started off writing erotica, and over the years, you've probably written a gazillion sex scenes. And you used to have an orgasm count on your website, which always made me laugh. Have you still got that or not? I'm not sure.
No.
I forgot I had that. Bring back the orgasm count, I say.
I can't count them anyway. I would need to hire someone to count them.
There you go, you see. Anything's possible. So how do you go into every book and keep your sex scenes fresh?
I think I mostly don't. But I don't know, because, you know, we all have the same bodies and there's only so much we can do with them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what you do, it's always going to be the same. So it has to be about character and emotion. And I think over the books, I mean, now these days my sex scenes have become much more emotional than they used to be, because it's the only way to keep it interesting for me as well as for the reader. I mean, the reader doesn't want to read the same thing every time in every book, you know, because the characters are different. I hope that, you know, that keeps it interesting, because I really don't see any other way how I could possibly make it interesting if it was just, you know, the same action all over again.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It has to be about character and emotion.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I totally agree with that. Doing it myself. Absolutely. So let's talk a little about your digital nomading, which you've been doing for a little while now. You up sticks from where you were living in Hong Kong, and you're travelling around the world and settling in places for a couple of months and writing a book and then buggering off again. So what prompted that, and how's it going, sort of travelling the world together? And I mean, I guess you've been working together for a long time anyway.
Yeah, it feels like forever.
Does feel like forever. But we were getting a bit tired of Hong Kong, and we wanted to see something else, because we'd been here for 6.5 years, I think it was, more or less. But we didn't want to go back to our home country of Belgium, so we thought, well, why don't we just travel around and see other places in the world, and maybe we'll find somewhere that we do want to settle. And, you know, seeing as we do have the luxury of being able to work from anywhere, which is a luxury that not many people have, so let's just take advantage of that and try that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been interesting. Hasn't all easy up until now, I have to admit. I think maybe more so for Harper than for me, because... I don't know, she, you know, you, Harper, you have to find a writing routine, and moving to a new place so often, I think it's not that easy to establish that routine.
I'm a delicate little flower.
Yes, she is.
So am I. I think it's a writer in us, you know. Yeah,
I think that's it. So that hasn't been that easy. So
It's hard not to have a home, I find. That is very hard because, you know, we go from place to place and, you know, the places you end up in, these are Airbnbs, so, you know, you find them on the internet and sometimes the pictures don't match with what you expect. And I don't know, it's just, it's not easy to, like, create a home over and over again. It's not a home, you know, it's just a place where you stay temporarily. And for me, that's been pretty hard because I like my routine, you know, and I like my office and all of that, and I don't have that anymore now, and that's been a bit hard for me.
But you seem to have been managing, like, are you still getting your writing routine done and your word count done?
Yeah, it depends. I mean, every time we move to a new place, it takes some time. Like, we've just arrived in Hong Kong like 2 days ago. I haven't written anything, even though my schedule said that I had to, but, you know, I've learned to, you know, when we move, I need to take some time just to get used to it, you know. Even though this is Hong Kong, but, you know, we're in a place we're in an apartment we've never been in before, things like that, you know, it takes time to adjust when you go to a new place, and, but I have been able to write, but maybe not as much lately as I would want to, but I'm not sure that's just down to the digital nomad thing, you know. I think just sometimes I just, you know, want to do too much, push myself too much, and then, you know, there's always a little bit of an after effect that, you know, wants to say slow down a bit. So I think that it's also that.
And it's probably a mindset shift, isn't it, to have to working on the road. Like you say, it's very different to just being at home and being in one place all the time.
No, it's extremely different, especially as a writer. I think, you know, if you're like a programmer or something like that, which is very different than writing, because writing, I mean, it is a very, you know, it's a pretty delicate thing to do. You know, it's not like, I mean, I can't like go somewhere at 2 in the afternoon and say, okay, I'm going to sit there and I'm going to write. I know some people do, but I can't do that. You know, I have my very established routine, and yeah, it's just been pretty hard to transport it to different places. So,
but last year when you were you were in one place in Hong Kong, you started 2016 with the aim of writing a book a month, and I think you managed 7, which is pretty good going. But you did kind of conk out around April time, wasn't it, I think. So tell me about the experience of trying to do that, and what did you learn?
Yeah, well, you know, it's not possible, but the reason why I, for a brief period of time, believed it was possible is because, you know, I have written books in 3 weeks, for instance, you know. And when you write a book in 3 weeks, you think you can write the next book in 3 weeks also. But that is not always true, because every book is different, right? And as much as I would like the experience to be exactly the same every time, you know, I think like, oh, I have my routine, and if I do this, and, you know, how the writer's mind works. But I have found that it's really not like that at all. That, you know, I mean, we are humans, you know, we are not book machines. And I think we need to take, especially me, need to take that into account once in a while, that, you know, writing a book a month is, it's madness, really. So I write fast and I write a lot, but I've learned that it is definitely impossible, and that perhaps I should not push myself to do these crazy things, and that, you know, people will wait for the next book.
Yeah.
Even if it comes out, you know, a month later or 2 months later, people will still be there, you know. They'll be wanting it even more because they had to wait a little bit longer, you know.
Yeah.
So
I find when you're on the writing end of writing, that's very well put, isn't it? When you're on the writing end of writing, of books, it's kind of like it goes in dog years, isn't it? So it's like, oh, I can't wait another month, but actually you can. So readers will like what you write even if you get it out a month later. So thinking about the two of you working for Lady Lit, what are the best and worst parts of working together?
I'll let my wife answer that one.
That's a delicate question. I think, you know, we've been doing this for a while, and we've been together for a very, very, very long time, so we know each other really well, and we've managed to build up a working process where we've ironed out most of the kinks, and we complement each other really well now. We both bring things that the business needs to the business, so I think
I'm the drama queen, right? And yes. You're the opposite of the drama queen.
Yeah. I can't say that, so yes, but that's true.
Well, you say it to me all the time, so you can say it now as well.
If my wife were on this call, she'd be saying exactly the same about me, so, you know.
Yeah, but being a drama queen is good for writing, right? But
then, you know, it's what you need. It's what you need.
Balance it out a little bit and make sure that stuff gets done and that we don't go bankrupt and stuff, and that I don't burn myself out completely. So
yeah. And when you're planning your books, are you outline people? Do you plan your books, or do you just sort of pants it?
Well, I'm not that much of a plotter, but I write romance, so, you know, I know how the book is going to end, and, you know, a lot comes from the characters. And after every writing session, I do force myself, because sometimes it's hard, to think about, you know, to outline the next three chapters, so I have at least that, so that the next day when I start again, I know exactly what I'm going to write. And I do have a rough idea of, you know, what the plot points are going to be. But I'm not someone who plots out an entire book beforehand, because it changes anyway. With me, it changes all the time. So I would say...
You do plot it out more than you used to.
More than I used to, yeah, that's true. That's true. And it does help. I do find it helps. But I don't know. I'm not that much of a plotter, though.
Okay. And as well as your own books as well, you do anthologies with Lady Lit and publish... I don't know if you've published other authors' novels. I know you've done a lot of anthologies, but are you planning on doing more of those this year?
No, I don't think so.
No? Just going to concentrate on you.
I think for us, the best business decision we made, I think it was maybe 2 years ago already, was to no longer publish any other authors, because, you know, it's difficult to give other authors what you can give yourself. So, I don't know, we thought we were actually, they might be better off publishing with someone else, because we know what it takes to make a book successful. And it's just the two of us, right? So if we had to do that for other authors as well, it's a bit hard. And the anthologies, I don't know. I thought it was just a lot of work, you know, and an anthology is never going to do as well as one of my novels, so...
Yeah,
That's why we made a decision.
So that's you pivoted in business terms.
Yes.
Yeah.
Pivoted, yes. Might do some co-writing in the future, though.
Who knows? It could happen.
Yeah,
so, and Caroline, you started a book, I know. And you're...
I was hoping you would have forgotten that.
Because, you know, you say that you're not going to publish any other authors, just the two of you. So... you're involved in the drafting and editing process of Harper's books, so how are you finding writing your own?
Very, very hard. I started writing at the end of last year, I think in November I got started on it, but then, yeah, I don't know, life kind of got in the way with all the... because we were going to be moving away from Hong Kong and having to arrange all the logistics of that, and the writing of my book kind of dropped down in the list of priorities.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to say, originally we had planned on writing this book together. It was going to be a co-writing project, and then I was rudely abandoned by my co-writer.
Someone poofed out.
Yes, so I had to do it on my own, which I started on, and the book is in my head, and I think it could make a really good book, but I just, yeah, I know, you know, it sounds stupid because you can always make time, but I've just been so busy with all the other stuff that we've been doing that I haven't really had time to focus on it enough. So it is still pretty much at the same stage it was at in November last year.
Okay, but, yeah, I apologize for bringing that up.
I am in talks with a friend of mine to maybe collaborate on it with him, so... we'll see.
Okay.
More on that in a few months, maybe.
All right. When I come back and do you interview again in 2 years, there'll be a lot more to say.
Hopefully. We'll see.
And what can, when can, well, I'll get my words out in a minute. When can we expect the next title from you, Harper, and when will that be? What will it be?
My next book will be Pygmeat 5, and it will be called Water Under Bridges, and it will be out on June 30th.
Okay.
That's the next one.
Okay, so pretty soon after this one comes out. This podcast will be out in May. Cool. So tell us again where readers can sign up for mylesfic.com. Is it mylesfic.com?
Yes, it is mylesfic.com.
And go and sign up there and get a discount, an email of discounted lesfic every single week, which is terrific.
And if you like lesfic, you know, you can't lose, because you will get good books in your inbox and they will be steeply discounted, so really you have nothing to lose, because signing up is totally free. So there you go.
That's it. Nothing to lose. What a great title for a book that would be.
Yeah, very catchy.
And final question, if you could be the love child of any two writers, alive or dead, who would you choose and why?
Okay, I have two answers for this. I have a highbrow one and a lowbrow one.
Okay, go on then.
So the highbrow one is supposed to make me, you know, look good. And that would be Hanya Yanagihara and Paul Auster, because, you know, they're lost, well, A Little Lie by Hanya Yanagihara, that like completely tore me apart. That was so good. It's like the best book I've read in 10 years. And then the last, Paul Auster, that was like, you know, also like 800 pages. It was really good. But then my more lowbrow answer would be Marion Keyes, because I think she might be my real mother, because we have so much in common. I don't know, I was reading like this non-fiction book she wrote about her life, and I was like, oh, but I do this, and it's like, you know, little things like, you know, being very clumsy and stuff like that. But I'm not as funny as Marion Keyes. And then the other one would be Gillian Anderson, because then I would really fancy myself.
And I've never had anyone say that before, so well done.
I don't know if she writes her books herself, though, but I haven't read it. I must admit, I've not read Gillian Anderson's thrillers, but maybe I should try them.
Yeah, maybe you should. On that note, I'll leave you to go off and get a mirror. No. thank you so much for taking the time to record this with me, and I apologise for being late again.
We've had time to finish our gin and tonic before.
Oh, well, there you go. Perfect.
It's gin o'clock in Hong Kong, so.
Yeah, gin o'clock. All right, thank you very much, and I'll speak to you soon.
Thank you.
That's the end of this Lesbian Book Club, so this is me, Claire Lydon, signing off. If you'd like to find out more about Harper Bliss, just check out www.harperbliss.com, and you can find out about all her books on that website. And again, MyLesfic is mylesfic.com to sign up for their discount newsletter. If you'd like to find out more about me and my books, do check out my website, which is www.clairelydon.co.uk, or just look me up on any of the major digital outlets, including Amazon, iTunes, Barnes & Noble, Kobo, Bella Books, and all the other digital outlets. I am everywhere, hopefully. You can also follow me on Facebook, claire.lydon. You can follow me on Twitter, where I'm pretty active, at @ClaireLydon. Or you can follow me on Instagram and see photos of my upcoming holiday. That's at @ClaireFic. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks to Denise for producing this podcast. It's much appreciated. And make sure you tune in to the Lesbian Lounge for all the latest LGBT news, views, interviews and gossip, as well as Ragtime, which is the other terrific podcast on the platform. I'll be back next month with more hot book club action, and I'll be interviewing lesbian fiction author Andrea Bramhall. See you then.